It's great to be back here again. We thank you for inviting me. Thank you, Paul, too. We had a great workshop, so very productive. I thought tonight, actually, I need a timepiece of some kind.
Do you
want
to
tell
you sort of?
5 minutes? Yeah,
sure.
I thought what I'd do is I read some poems here. I'm trying not to repeat myself, but I'd like to read some from my last book, and I have it here, Looking Creature. It's two books in one, so if you feel like you're, you know, feeling seasick, it's because it is going backwards and forwards. And some new work, and I thought maybe I would just start with a poem. I noticed here too that, you know, we have a real problem with our young men veering off the highway, and I think here you have also similar recognition in wreaths and flowers and appropriate spots on the highway. So this is called Brief Thought. You see her from the highway as you drive home for Christmas, where the tall eucalypt stands at the edge of bush, dumb with its necklace of flowers, drooping, as if it too is weary of the weight. She leans as if to kneel, and you are caught into the slump of her, mute grief careless in the tangle of her clothes, at the end of the long thread of skid. It's burn of rubber, odourless now, scars an uncomprehending earth right to its roots, black spores against the young, their sports cut short. Across this wide brown land, strings of floral crosses tacked on trees, guard rails and signposts, sprout names in a tortured kind of style, roadmaps tagged out by a new form of headstone. Dot-to-dot drawing pages from the Book of Youth that link them in migration points under their flight towards that unaged land where years evaporate in a blaze. She laces the gum with fresh garland, blooms left yesterday, wilting in the sear of summer heat. Days she will be pulled here, tumbling in slow motion, teardrops down vacant months ahead. Winter will never arrive with its resting moment before dark. Her son is already days behind in history, photo on the mantle, heat welded to his 18th year. Halting, you slide your phone open and call home. Thanks. I thought I'd read another new one that's, you know, it's that, my books are full of these hopeless love poems, you know, that never come to fruition, so I'm sure none of you know that experience. This is quite new to you, so. This is one of those ones where you weren't quite sure what was going to happen, but, you know. It's called The Night You Came. I've seen it before. Manon coral strand shining ivory cream in late day, amber rack on the pitch black rock whiskering around the bay, bends caked in snow, their quartzite veins pumping water under a tarred and boiling sky, that Curragh in Seal Bay, strangely painted bright woad blue, listing under a gale before it's hauled up to dry shelter. Air so translucent on a still day, there was no need for breath, suspended as we were in the very heart of it, in the plenty of it, in the exhausted contentment of it. After tramping between spooks along the bog road, light a medium of clear mist, angel's breath, sky to loft to land as we sat. Or summer slay the greatest kitchen window so bright it burns away all thoughts of any other place. Sea beyond, blue as a feather off a peacock on Pat's cold chimney top. for some reason unknowable to us all, it cries and gazes toward the sea from the half-stone house below. We never know what that means, a peacock on the roof in the wild west of Ireland. But the night you came, when I hoped but did not know why or for what, the night you went, when I did not weep, but fell quiet, the moon was all gold like never before, big as old currency, doubloon fat, pirate rich, a Midas moon dripping with Minoan gold. Maybe it had slipped inside the sun's skin, dropped as it disrobed to sleep. Maybe it was reels and necklace from Crete's hoarded past. Maybe it was only plate, fit to peel and slate, enlarged reflection of a small candle flame, distorted through old pane glass, a bulging fake, or a daisy dust trick of the eye. But I never saw it like that. This one is, I never read this, it's about sex. So, for those of you who feel you're too young, would you close your ears and pretend to be talking about the television? Too late. Okay, so, this is probably instead of Venice for you. It's called trawling. You inhabit your skin fully, live it from the core right up to the surface, where solidity of matter vanishes into air. I know how to call you now, what shape for my parted lips, where to beat my tongue on the pain of nipple, what sweet song you came for. You have slipped beneath my wary eyes, shadow of your head along my breast, nerves of your fingertips, phosphorescence on my arms, tingling in the dark beside your noisy sleep. Your mouth trawling left the moonlight lattice of salt crystal trailing inside my thighs. Your webbed hand swam into me, the inland sea I'd long forgotten, flooding again wild with life, as if long years of drought had been a storage of desire, not an absence. But these are virtues of the flesh only. The heart inhabits another place. Long ago I replaced its blood with deep sea water, its plum purple chambers will not get too hot, chilled to the breath of winter. Meeting when we're almost young, you might convince me of hope. That is the offbeat thud of its small pinioned wing I hear against the ribs of domesticity. You tell me I need to fall in love, and your flame takes off, unsubtle in its stiffened silver plumage. The owl tattooed on your right shoulder blade spreads its unserrated wings for you, its silent flight cutting the yellow buttery dawn. These are the leaving hours. There in the skies of flesh and blue, there are things that do not speak of brokenness. Here on the ground, where breath is held, waiting, you have slid between nerves and bones, almost to the heart. I have a sequence of poems in this book called The Dead Mother Poems, and they're quite strong poems. The book itself deals with depression in the first and loneliness in the first third of it, and my mother had depression when she was through her life, undiagnosed of course in those days, in the 50s, nobody knew care really. And so the middle sequence is about my mother's dying and my caring for her. And the second part of that is my realisation 15 years after her death of the problematic nature of that relationship, including the fact that it was very difficult with a depressed mother who drew you into that depression to know where the boundaries of herself and myself finished. So, actually I wasn't going to read this poem because I'm frightened I'm repeating myself, but I think I will read it because it's a really strong poem. It's a very, it's an angry poem. Begins the sequence, and the sequence deals with anger and love and forgiveness, obviously. You know, I don't leave you all hanging there at this time, but it is a strong poem. And I'll read it anyway. Adhesion. I had to do this, mother. It got too dark and lonely here with you living underground. Only the sound of the earth as it rubs against the walls turning in its sleep. I had to do it. The rush is on me. One red angel stands brushing light from the door, her hollow wings whirring like flight. I have to fix it now or stay lost. I'm so tired. I can't carry you any further. My body frenzied, it fizzles like gunpowder in a casting wheel. This weight makes me weary, and the dark so heavy. They don't get that, do they? How exhausted it makes us in this light-lost maze. Is that you or me? If I can just slip this skin, rise out of this flesh, the load will be left behind, won't it fall into ashes, feather light, crushed with the bone and a sad, sad heart. There's a stain here. Can you see that, can you? Can you hear me calling you? Look at this stain. You tell me where it came from. You or I? How can I tell? Who owns this for you? Who speaks? What did you do here to make one mind out of two? Then leave me alone. I know how you feel. I am how you feel. You grew into me. I am the mandrake plant disunearthing my long screaming. Original tar baby, I am stuck to you without feathers to fly, coming cold with your own childhood night. What happened to my skin? You adhered to it, no borders, nothing contained me, nothing held. Everything flowed away into you, and your tide rushed back in me. I was born old. I was born responsible, mother forever young. Never grown, how you clung. It must have frightened me. I was a child, my shoulders never strong enough, pallbearer for your dead life. You were my burden, my devil's note. I've come for the cure. Soon I'll see boundaries, tall gates, and a range to toll. Once words are down here, you'll be on the outside. They do it to conjoined twins. It's bound to hurt. It's sliding along my spine now, facility knife. I thought maybe I'm going to do this poem for Mary because she was just talking to me about John O'Donoghue and John Moriarty. And at Christmas week last year, where I read regularly, we lost a few people, a friend of mine, Susan, who had died, wonderful woman, and John Moriarty and John O'Donoghue, so it was a bit of a lift. And it makes you think about what's important. So it's called Ink, Paper, Voice, Christmas Week 2008. Driving the road home west of west, a mist is threading along this spine of land, splaying across the high road, spilling over cliffs and harbour below, Seal Bay in the mirror side. Tired we are, bodies fluid with channels, heads still rolling with the tongue of its voice and its music, held deep in the throat, then coming like spirit into the air. Limbs cased around the tunes, vibrate with old rhythms, shaken from the dancer's feet, shimmering along the floor of the ardour into these veins, travelling home. We speak of Susan as she was on first meeting, and the gift she gave me of connection, beginning right here, along this thread of rock and peace into the Atlantic. Now her art hangs in Bridget's garden, her ashes lie in Irish commonage near that smile of the beach, Dog's Bay. 10 years, I think, 10 years listening here among a community dedicated to imagination, to art, to the beat in close that remains after flesh has passed. As Arts Week spills into us, we know our gains and losses. Paul Durkin made us weep again tonight for the passion of his father's politics, from which he turned in Westport to propose marriage, full with the heat of it in him. For John Moriarty, his grey wisdom, wound round this town in a shawl of consolation, is death and absence that the trail thought can take. Made us laugh applauding for Brendan Flynn, eyes still blue beyond blue, listening with that enigmatic smile of Durkin's lines, saw him sitting, waiting at the foot of Propatrick, a poem on his tongue always, literature, a history, and the genealogy of stone. 31 years weaving this fabric of festival, braiding and plaiting the old with the new, so that all the important things remain. There is a moment now driving home, and John O'Donoghue seems tangled into the landscape, just a bird sitting in the dark beside the car, something simple and lovely he would wind into words we could recall for comfort in the dark alone, his soul as eternal and new as a Celtic knot. We think of him because the quiet loyalty of breath has left him. But Michael Hartnett knew, paper speaks, ink speaks. Poetry and music carry us through the little death and the great, float us along a current we still imagine is endless, though we know better. Earth revolves relentlessly, tides helpless, and we in our shortness of life plan as if the years don't matter, unaware almost that this transience is the gift. Time being something we can neither ravage nor store.
Thank you. I thought I'm actually starting out to read a new ones here, so instead of all ones, but this is the chocolate poem. It's the chocolate poem because it's the strangest thing that chocolates would be called Lear. Do you not think it's a strange name for chocolates, Lear chocolates? Because you've seen them, you know.
No.
It's the strangest thing. And someone gave me a box of the chocolates a year ago with a golden ribbon around them. And I found the ribbon, I couldn't let it go one way or another, I couldn't let it go. So I'd give it around a gift and then people would leave the wrapping and I'd pick the ribbon up and take it and keep going round and round different presents. And it's travelled around the world and back, this ribbon. But there's an amazing piece on the website for Lear Chocolate, and the quotation is this. The story of the children of Lear is a legend of deep mystery, magical powers, poetry, love, beauty, and passion. Like Lear Chocolate. So, this is my chocolate poem. It's called Lear's Golden Bow. The band is wide, fine and frail as gauzy heron veil, barely present in its delicacy, a breath of thread, its borders thick, gold, amber, almost honey, with one dark binding thread strong as a wing beat. Golden elastic with a bow completes the circle that binds boxes of chocolate, smooth and rich, the children of Lear,
fly across each day endlessly, their swan wings lifting, serpentine necks aching for a way back inside human form. Their story is the third sorrow of storytelling. The sea god Lear, failing to win kinship, gains a wife who dies. Their four children left motherless, he marries her sister. Jealous of his love, she fails to kill, but bewitches them. Swans, they will sing sweetly and live 900 years. The first 300 in their homeland, close to him. The second in the North Strait, cold and harsh. The third in Connacht, among islands and rough seas. So cold they are, 1 century, their feathers and feet freezing to the rocks, leaving their flesh behind as they swim painfully raw in the salt. When transformation finally comes, it's said the first Christian bell awakes them to old age and death. Or should freedom be when the woman from the south and the man from the north will come together? Their statue brews in the Garden of Remembrance, Parnell Square, sinuous necks arching for the sky as the children's bodies, still young, fall to earth. Rebirth, they say, resurrection, independence, yoke thrown off. Why, some mad romantic might give Lear's name to chocolate, I do not question. The labyrinth of the heart is strange in particular, and the sweet so smooth, perhaps it makes the long journey we all take less dark, more nectarous. But the ribbon now, that is pure frippery. And yet perhaps it is that golden circle from which the enchantment first appeared, or the pathway of the sun along as we trail around it, linking people, place. I find it will not leave me, the so sad tale, nor the ribbon which finds itself travelling round the earth with me in some orbicular meanderings I barely understand. Wrapped around gifts from one end of earth to the other, that one ribbon keeps reappearing, circling a pashmina from Turkey for Eta, green as Manon Shallow. Earrings of pearl and marquesite for Linda, river sheen white. Maloof for Grantham, for Barry, a court moment of spiritual passage. Poems from Istanbul for Beverly, with Yates imagined streets he never walked. Then the box itself, dangerous pleasure, truffles for Tracy. And the golden link becomes a chain, light, connected, that traces the joinery of friendship as sweet as Lear on the tongue. Among other things, among other terrible health disasters in my life, I had breast cancer in 1996, and another friend who was a colleague of mine also had it, but she had a much harder time than I did. She had 3 recurrences, and during the time when, you know, it's weird to say it, but, you know, terrorism was a really big, you know, now terrorism is something we kind of all live with. There was a time when we ignored it. It's been going a long time, terrorism, we ignored it for a long time, and it's really big, you know, really big. And then now we're kind of living with it. And it struck me that there were various forms of terrorism that are not just political kinds. So this one is called Living with Terrorists, for Jennifer Harrison and me. Somewhere in the shadow land, preparation may be in train. Maybe the low combustion of gases or the careful nurture of disease that released slowly penetrates the breast, the great fragile breath of earth, so every creature's misty connection chokes. Maybe some intricate bomb packed full of deadly missiles, a burl of chaos spinning among the veins of spring and autumn, ready to gnarl the throb of sap. For us, cells we trusted once turned terrorists. The scuttle of cancer from out of the green fields struck here. That track pressed into the pile of the doormat never really sprang back. Scent of hoary breath never quite wafted from the front hall, no matter the vase of stargazer lilies in all their pink, sweet joys. The tick of time might camouflage a rush of fumes. That creak of bone, sharp ache in the hip, could be shrapnel from the first blast. The small dent, or is it a subtle knob of flesh, could be the landmine that escaped detection, another breast gone. Now we live here in these islands where certainty is laid waste. Days without fear, nights without breathless panic, were spent in another country, where the surprise of death arising early never clouds the blue, smiling day.
Sorry, I have a cold, that's why I have to keep going for the tissues. It's not that I'm weeping at my own poem.
Couldn't blame you for that.
I want to read you, it's another new one. Some of these I've been reading in the last few weeks with a friend of mine who plays harp. So I suppose I've got a new three now, and it's quite strange not to have Lynn here with the harp. But this one is it's a political poem about the so-called famine, which, you know, I now sort of think of as the Great Starvation. Not far from where I live, there's a valley with a lake in it called the Black Lake. And into this valley, near the Muiray Mountains, 600 people staggered during the famine because they were told they had to meet the governor for a decision about whether they were starving enough to be fed grain. So this is called The Long Walk. And there's a famine monument there you can see a few years ago there. It's a very powerful place to be. It's set in March 1849. It has a quotation from George Bernard Shaw's Man and Superman. Violet says the famine, and Malone, quote, with smouldering passion, know the starvation. When a country is full of food and exporting it, there can be no famine. And it also plays on the charge of the Light Brigade into the Valley of Death Road. The lodge that the governors were having their lunch in was called the Delphi Lodge. Still is. It's actually a country house. Now, I don't know how people go there, but, you know, it's very beautiful. The oracle could have foretold it, though the wisdom of Delphi was always silent in winter, and Pythia had long since withheld her voice. But with Crow Patrick to the back shoulder without serpents, and the goddess still hot upon its face with the old ways, you'd wonder all the signs would warn them, walkers grasping for grain, and into the valley of death stumbled the 600. Snow was sheeting across Ben Gorm and the Sheepfreak Hills, Muiray Mountains shuddering under rain. Blight was on the land, and the white globes of goodness that grew in the dark Irish earth had taken in fallen dust from America, fungus ridden with stench of starvation through its flesh, as into the valley of death staggered the 600. Children were barefoot in the iced air, their ragged clothes barely a cover for thin arms, rickety legs, their stomachs round with hunger, mothers too weary for tears at their cries, their own voices lost in despair, mouths long unfamiliar with appetite or taste
or something solid lost long before into the valley of death struggles the 600. In the rage of a storm, it's a part of sea of skeletons they were, or walking dead, spirits through which the wind blew as if their bones were all that held them up, and try though it may, no wind could play a tune on these bones, only the clacking beats of a funereal march, and into the valley of death scraped the 600. Hunched against the blizzard, Muilray indignant watched helpless as they clung overnight to sheer rock, to rough unflowering firs, waiting for the 7 a.m. attendance ordered by the Guardian, and let me name them, Colonel Hosgrove and Captain Primrose, who slept under their down and starched Irish linen as into the valley of death shivered the 600. From Limerick, Cork, Galway, food ships leaving for commerce's hungry mouth. From Kilruth, Rush, July 28, 1848, 7-11 tons of cherry oats, 128 tons of barley. Ship after ship from all the fine busy ports, laden with bacon and lamb, wheat and eggs, while Oscar Wilde's mother, hidden in the name Speranza, raised in poetry the theft of Irish food, yet still in the valley of death waited the 600. Delphi's lodger's table groaned under lunch while the wretches gathered waiting in front of the dining room windows, and the Guardians ate and talked, maybe about the terrible weather, the growing cost of living, the poor, maybe about the comfort or otherwise of their white beds, while on lawns between them and Black Lake in the Valley of Death huddled the 600. They took but a minute to deem the gathering not poor enough for government grain, turning their empty hands away. But here the land is full of pity, and the mountains opened, gathering their bones into its soft feet. Wind lifted them carefully in its arms and blew them easily into the loch. The snow cast a blanket over the young, and others were washed by the sea onto the beds of Killary sand, while out of the valley of death trudged the 100.
I'm going to read Benefit because I like them in chains. Don't you, Shane? I'm going to read that poem for you, Shane.
Oh, good.
This is actually, I now have two Venice experiences. This is a poem about Venice. I always wanted to go to Venice with a lover on the gondola under the Bridge of Sighs. So romantic. And I ended up in Venice with my two young teenage boys, throwing water bottles at each other across the hotel room with a Miranda chandelier above us. And when we got to the gondola, we went to the cheap time because, you know, a single mother with two sons really doesn't need the romance of an evening. And when we got there, the gondola was waiting, it was waiting, it was waiting, and finally, I said, what are we waiting for? And he said, where's the man?
Oh.
I said, there is no man. Get on with it. No man. He said, I will sing to you anyway. I said, please, do not sing to me. In the middle of the afternoon. Anyway, what I didn't realise, of course, was the cheap timers, because the tide was high. So when we got into the boat and we were sailing along quite happily in the gondola, after about 5 minutes, there's this rapid Italian was fired at me, and I was saying, why are you Italian? And he suddenly pushed us all over, you know, in the boat, like this. And the fact was, we had to all roll over in the boat to get the gondola under the bridge because the water was so high. Not well I had imagined Venice. mine there, Linda, she's a painter who does the beautiful paintings on the CD cover and the book cover. And the day I was due to arrive there from Rosamini in Belgrade, I got a text from her saying, can't possibly come, marriage breaking down. I then proceeded to get sick, and I spent 5 days sick in Venice. I am never going to Venice again. It's finished for me. But this is actually a romantic poem that I'll finish on, and it's a love poem, you know, because I'd had this little fling, you know, with this really gorgeous man in Ireland at Strokestown Poetry Festival. I don't do that anymore. I'm too old.
You never
saw us from poetry. So this is a kind of a love poem, and it doesn't have it to mention the children at all, except you'll see there's a kind of desire to escape them at one point. And what else can I tell you about it? It's not funny. I'll tell you that. Venice for Hugh. Sirens thrill along mute canals near midnight. I count the required 16 for flood warning. Water laps intimate under the window of Hotel Treaty, dwelling across cobbled fondamenta beneath. I watch from the second floor, knowing others hoist quickly their chairs to the ceiling, elsewhere in ground floor rooms. The sea is making inroads across islands of disbelief. Lovers drink from each other's lips between fast street lamps, feet soaked in salt. Here I am only lost walking, never on the water. Hail came suddenly in the afternoon, lightning jolting the boats from Murano, shattering talk and the bare uplifted faces. I remember your eyes. I drink wine from a jug, ruby red, fat and round the taste. Your kisses still stroll across my tongue with it, though you are oceans away. Every filigree of connection the body makes from lips, around a breast, along a thigh, shiver down deep inside big pink memory. Masks are hanging from the walls, crowding windows of small shops in the market off Canal de Canareggio. Silver and peacock blue, raven black and scarlet, their shape-shifting visages await the gift of sight. We alone can position there. Here is the place to lose myself. One step inside this space of gold, all children left behind, all worries and the dent of daily life in the goblet of fancy evades recognition along with the name, the obligation of returning. She is with disguise, it is free. I could do anything here. Venice is an old lover still wet with longing, her body unashamed. Everywhere bridges over a maze of aqueous veins, the map of love's capillaries, with some dead ends, some narrow ways. Some bridges the gondola can only pass under if I lean heavily to one side, while the boatman dances his oar against the wooden lollies. You have to pay. Venice is sinking, but slowly enough. Gates can be erected to block the hungry tide that surges, purling courtship between water and stone. Sea comes for me tonight. Maybe it carries our breath from the lake near your door, rain off our shoulders in Fahis Wood at Beltana, view from your purple tulips and uncut meadow sweets. Images of you clutter my mind's alleyways, slip like shadows between corner and canal. They rouse longing in a city of water and glass, liquid gold, fluid hot. Caravaggio dark, skies were sanguine at sunset, now mist inside shutters, shrouds the Venetian glitter of light, splayed on walls from red and blue buds in the Murano chandelier. Tonight is full moon.
A mist of rain rings her wide-eyed light. Loneliness, a single beam down the smudged waterway. If only this small light, or this dark night, or the seas in patience working to the foundations of this old wall, could tie the jar of the future momentarily, and you were there on a shore somewhere, waiting. This is a city of indulgence, and I pay the boatman twice if he brings you. Thank you very much.